Hey, everybody.
Hi, guys. Well, from the sexual hotbed that is Salt Lake City, Utah,
it's Thank God I'm Atheist,
the podcast.
I'm Frank.
And I'm Dan.
Coming up on today's episode, we went on a temple tour.
We went on
an
LDS
temple tour.
Yeah.
They hold these open houses before they dedicate their temples.
Yeah.
And so we drove up to one up a little bit north of good old Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
And we checked it out.
We did.
So we're going to be
reporting back to you on that.
And so
all the various things that we saw and did.
Yeah.
The miserable lines we stood in.
Oh, yeah. Okay, let's not get ahead of ourselves. You almost got me going off about the lines. So
no, we will talk about that later.
Yeah.
Boy, how to tease a thing, man.
Wow.
We just excited everyone about us talking about lines. I promise there's more than just that. We won't just be ranting about the queue.
Now, as it were.
We'll rant about plenty of other stuff, too.
Yeah. There's that and other things.
My ranting gets raves.
Okay.
To quote, where did I get that? Hawkeye Pierce, I think, on an episode of MASH. Anyway.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Credit where it's due, people.
Yeah. You go, Dan.
So I will go. How about that?
Okay,
I'll
go.
I'll just launch right in.
There you go.
Massachusetts allows gay marriage.
I've heard this,
yes. You know that it is one of the states that, that's okay in.
Yeah.
There is, however, a house in Massachusetts in which it is not okay.
Okay. I'm intrigued.
A lawsuit apparently is in action currently in which a gay couple. Oh, they're not young. They're in their 50s. In their
a lot less interesting.
Yeah, I know, right? They're definitely not as cute as I was hoping. No, I'm just
kidding. They might be adorable.
They might be absolutely adorable. Anyway, they wanted to buy a house that was owned by the Roman Catholic Diocese in Boston.
Ooh, that's some bad juju.
I don't know.
It could be.
It might be lovely. Might be a lovely house.
That diocese?
Well, there is that.
Priests.
Children?
Mm-hmm. It's like buying Neverland Ranch.
Anyway, they're a married couple. They wanted to buy a house, and they were in negotiations for it, and then the church backed out of negotiations and said, No, you can't buy it.
Oh.
And I think and the reason that the lawsuit claims that they backed out of it was because they were concerned that the boys would host gay weddings. At their house.
So it wasn't enough that these two are probably already married.
Oh, well, they are married.
Or their sexual acts.
Right,
none of
right.
this bothered them.
No.
It's the thought of there being marriages performed.
Yeah. Yeah, they can't.
Oh,
they
God.
They can't in good conscience sell a house where they think that house might eventually.
Oh my God. Wow.
You bunch of idiots. You know, it's so funny. I'm selling a condo currently. I'm in the process of that.
Yeah.
Closes this week.
Oh, hey. Cool.
And you can't get emotionally attached to what's going to happen to the place that you're selling.
No, you can't.
You know, Andrea likes to watch all the HGTV buying and selling house shows.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of these people, and also Andrea stages homes for people who are selling their house.
Right.
And all these people are so emotionally attached to their home, and they're so emotionally attached to the stuff that's in the home. And they're like, no, I don't want to change that part of the house because it's me. And it's like, you're selling it.
Yeah.
It's not you anymore. It's them.
Well, I remember when I was a kid, my parents, we were moving out of one place that we lived in. The new people who moved in tore out all the landscaping that my mom had worked really hard on, drained the swimming pool, painted the bottom of it black, inexplicably. And, I remember being incensed, but I was like 12.
Right.
So
how dare you do something to the house you now own?
How dare you alter this house?
Yeah. You're not honoring the family from whom you bought it.
No,
anyway,
in fact.
Yeah. The church, it is worth noting, claims that this wasn't a case of discrimination against gay people. We didn't even know they were gay, according to...
But we're still concerned they might perform gay marriages.
Well, you know, I guess they're claiming, the church is claiming that that's not what was the case.
Oh, well, where did that story come from then?
Well, that's what the lawsuit claims.
Oh.
Is what happened.
Oh.
So, who knows? Yeah, the Roman Diocese of Worcester ended negotiations in June, and the couple alleged that they learned why in an email they inadvertently received in which diocesan chancellor Thomas Sullivan cited concern, quote, about the potentiality of gay marriages there.
There's all sorts of potential for anything.
Yeah, I would think they'd be more concerned about the potentiality of butt sex.
Thanks, Dan.
Well, just saying, they don't like that.
No,
they think that's icky. Well,
they probably do like it.
Well, okay.
Depending
outwardly, at least in public, they claim not to like it. What two people do in the comfort of their own harnesses is their own business, as far as I'm concerned.
Sure. Yeah. Wow.
Or what eight people?
Gross
do.
Stereotypes is what you're peddling. You're making huge assumptions about these two men's sexual proclivities.
No, I'm just trying to go as far
based on the fact that they're gay.
That's
Thanks,
true.
Dan.
It's a pretty big leap for me to say that two gay men are having butt sex.
That's slings.
A huge leap.
You made a sling joke.
Right. Okay, so the way the humor works, Frank, is that you take the thing, you push it as far as
I'm
you can.
I'm just saying, Dan.
Yeah, whatever.
I'm saying you've made huge, huge assumptions.
And I'm just saying that all you gay people are gross.
Gross assumptions had nothing to do with it being icky.
Anyway.
Had to do with the size of the assumptions.
Well, whatever.
Anyway.
Yeah. I assume that a 59-year-old and a 57-year-old probably have more boring sex lives than younger guys, right?
Or they're probably trying to spice it up.
Maybe
it's their last opportunity.
It's their last, you know, their last hurrah.
Their last hurrah.
Well, I wish them well. I mean, go get the sling. Have fun. go, guys. Matter of fact, you know, I just attended a conference yesterday.
Oh,
I'm just going to tease something here. In the next couple weeks, in the next few weeks. We'll be playing some interviews that we did with some really fun speakers. We got and one of them was Dr. Daryl Ray, who's the author of a couple of books, including his most recent, which is called Sex and God, really interesting stuff. And the other was Greta Christina, who is author of a book called Why Are You Atheists So Angry? which is ironic for us. we had some fun with that one. Anyway, yeah, they were
but
both
that's coming up.
Yeah,
not
that's
in
coming
this episode.
No, no, no.
But on upcoming episodes.
In upcoming episodes.
Yeah.
But what's great is that they were here in town for a thing called Sex Stravaganza, which was just about religion and sex.
Yeah. But actually. Garnered the attention of one Mr. Glenn Beck.
Oh, yeah. It was in the Salt Lake Tribune, and then Glenn Beck picked it up. On his quote-unquote news outlet called The Blaze, which is...
burning down the truth?
Yeah,
What's their tagline?
they're like, The Blaze, where everything's flaming hot. Anyway, Daryl Ray, I was going to say, Dr. Ray was talking in his talk, and they all actually were just talking about how, you know, how we need to ditch Christian modes of sexuality, Christian and religious notions of sexuality, how we're all kind of locked into them. Even if you didn't grow up Christian or religious, I mean, it's just in the water.
There's still missionary position.
But it is like it's in our brains, you know, all of these sort of set ideas about how sex is supposed to look and what sex is good and what sex is not good and what sex is appropriate and what sex is not appropriate. And in the end, it's like, Greta Christina actually had some great things to say about it. She basically said, we need to look at this through an actual, as atheists especially, we need to look at this through an actual, like, real scientific lens and say, what is it, what are our, we need to look at it in terms of what harm does it do?
Right.
you know, if it makes us feel good, we need to look at it through an actual ethical lens.
Rational sex.
Yes. Yes.
Let's have, yeah.
Let's have,
everybody, let's have some rational sex.
That doesn't sound very fun, though. Let's have wild, crazy sex, but think about it in terms of actual rational ethics rules.
Sure. All right.
Yeah. But I don't know. So, yeah.
Rational sex, that kind of turns me on.
Well, it would. No, I don't know what that means.
I don't know what that means either.
So, yeah, go out and have your crazy sex, you nutty
atheists, you.
But not in that particular house, according to the church.
No. But, you know, a few states over, Dan.
Yeah.
There are also Catholics dealing with some homosexual issues.
Which state is that?
It's the state of Ohio.
Oh, Ohio.
There's Franciscan. Franciscan.
You're such Wow, the Italianate pronunciation.
I've been practicing my Italian, but
that's true. You're
totally just you're running out of nowhere. The Franciscan University of Steubenville.
Steubenville.
Yes, in Ohio.
Famous for their Steubenville Franciscans.
Pitchers, right? Don't they have
something like that? Anyway.
Isn't there like Crystal? Steuben?
I don't.
Steubens.
Steuben.
It's not Steubenville. Anyways. They're facing some problems with their accreditation.
Oh, no.
Yeah, because...
A religious institution that might not be accreditable?
I know, it's shocking.
How is that possible?
They have a social work program. Hey, cool. Okay. Good.
Sure.
You know, whatever. Bull. But they offer a course called SWK 314, Deviant Behavior.
Oh, Deviant Behavior, which in sociology is criminal acts, that sort of thing.
Yes. And so the course description links homosexuality with crimes like murder, rape, and robbery.
Interesting.
Yeah. it's a little it's a little disturbing.
Well, yeah. Well, although here's what's interesting. In sociological terms, homosexuality is a deviance from the norm, and in that way you could consider it deviant.
That's their defense.
So, I mean, sociologically
saying,
but you don't put that
in the same class as rape. Murder,
right,
like those are the things that they're going to be looking at in that
and that's
class.
and that's how the course is defined. Like in the course catalog, it says,
"Well, I just clicked over to the course catalog. Uh-huh. The class has since been delisted.
Oh well,
so it's not in the official list anymore, sadly. But yeah, the university says that the term deviant is used in the sociological sense,
right?
It's almost verbatim of what you just said to mean different from the norm." And it says that the course covers a wide range of topics, including crime, alcoholism, heterosexual deviance, and homosexuality.
Right.
But the gay and lesbian alumni of Franciscan University is not very happy.
Right.
With that explanation.
Yeah. You'd have to, first of all, what would be offensive is if the course was defined, you know, if you're reading in the course catalog and it says we cover such, you know, things as murder, rape, and homosexuality. Like if it's not delineated from the others as being like this is only deviant because it's different. It's not deviant because it's harming the society or whatever. Then you've got a problem.
Mm.
And chances are in a religious institution, they're not handling it very well.
No, probably not.
So, yeah. But I do have to say, I sympathize with that dilemma because it should be covered. Like, a lot of things should be covered in a deviant behavior class. And you're just blinking at me like I'm an idiot. But I took sociology when I was in college. And the fact is that crime is one part of deviant behavior. And then being on the fringes
that their accreditation is in trouble
suggests that they didn't handle it very
exactly.
Well.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I don't know how I feel about your little comment right now. So I'm just going to sit back and let you dig your hole.
There's no hole to dig. So I'm just saying sociologically speaking, there are segments like I belong in several deviant categories, and none of them are criminal.
Yeah, I know. And I know that, like, we can get down to parsing words here where it's like, well, but in this context, deviant is used this way.
And that's how
I get that. Right. I mean, I totally get that.
But you have to be clear about that.
But I think that, yeah.
Okay.
I think the word deviant hold, like,
it's loaded.
It's very, very, very loaded.
I get it.
And yeah. So just, for the other things to be in the list, it really colors what that word is meaning in that.
Absolutely.
Sense.
And that's, I totally agree with you 100% on that. It needs, so frankly, sociology in as a study needs to differentiate these things probably with better terminology.
Right.
Criminal deviance versus maybe not even deviant behavior, but differing behavior or fringe behavior or not even fringe. Like, yeah, they need to find a better word.
Yeah, it's like when my doctor, who I don't like at all.
But still continue to go to.
Well, I shouldn't call... The only reason I refer to him, I've only seen him once.
Oh, okay.
The only reason I call him my doctor is because technically he's my GP at the moment.
My most recent doctor.
Right. But I'll be changing my insurance here real soon. So hopefully I can go back to my old doctor.
Yeah.
But anyways, my old doctor, just point blank... First time I saw him in sort of that big long list of questions that they always ask you to get a sense of how they need to be, who you are.
Right. All that sort of thing.
What do you do? What's blah, blah, blah. He simply point blank asked, do you have sex with men or women?
Right.
Point blank. Boom.
Yeah.
Super easy, easy, easy. This is at like the Madsen Family Clinic. Right.
Right.
And he still comes out and like says it. Boom. Right.
Right.
And then...
not even do you identify as gay or straight.
No.
Doesn't matter.
It's who you have sex with, period.
Right.
New doctor...
that's the health question.
That's the health question. The new doctor says, do you engage in any high-risk behaviors?
Oh, my God.
And I knew exactly what he was doing because, like, the next question down that you expect to ask is, like, do you, like, you know, inject intravenous drugs or anything like that? Which I believe the other doctor did ask. Like, he's like, do you, like, use any hard drugs? Do you do this? Do you do that?
Sure.
Like... And I'm like, no. But anyways, but the new guy, super uber posh doctor.
High risk behaviors.
He asks, do you engage in any high risk behaviors? I knew exactly what the fuck he was asking.
Well, I jumped out of an airplane recently.
And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, I go, you know what? Yeah, I'm a gay man, but I don't go running around having sex with whomever. I'm really safe and careful. And like, and I'm not, you know, I don't sleep around.
So the answer is no.
And so the answer is no. But he didn't get to what he needed to get to.
Which was, are you gay?
Which is, do you ever have sex with gay men or with men?
Right.
You know, because there are other health concerns that,
just,
that come up.
Well, it just changes the health questions.
Right.
That's all it does. It's not like one is in greater danger than another. You know, straight people and gay people all get sexually transmitted diseases.
Exactly.
All of that stuff. But they get different ones or at very least... They need to be on the lookout for different things.
Right.
Knowing, you know, if you have sex with men, the profile of how many of which diseases you're more likely to get changes.
Right.
Than
and
if you
so
have sex with women.
I know the context is obviously different. One is social work and the other one is like being a doctor. But in his mind, being gay was linked with high risk behavior.
Right.
And if in social work you link it to the thought to the idea of deviancy.
Right. Yeah.
It changes everything. It colors it.
I'm with you. I think language matters.
So that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I agree.
Okay.
I was looking at a thing. So when you think about people who read the Bible frequently, do you think a social justice or a love of science? Because I'll be honest with you, I don't.
Okay. Where are you going with this, Dan?
Apparently, so a study came out. It was done at Baylor University, and it found that frequent Bible reading predicted greater support for issues ranging from the compatibility of science and religion to more humane treatment of criminals.
So basically, what we can gather here is that your more liberal religious types are the ones who are actually doing any of the Bible reading.
Who are actually frequently reading the Bible.
Exactly.
Bible, right.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas the less informed...
believe they know what the Bible says and stick with their brain, their preconceived notions about...
Because that's all that says to me.
Right. Well, and it does seem to be comparing people who frequently read the Bible with people who infrequently read the Bible, rather than people who believe the Bible and people who don't believe the Bible. It's not comparing those two things.
Okay.
So keep that in mind. But yeah, it is interesting. It found that the likelihood of Christians saying it's important to actively seek social and economic justice to be a good person increased 39% with each jump up on the ladder of frequency of reading scripture.
Wow.
Same thing happened with, they were more likely to say that it's important to consume or use fewer goods to be a good person. Same thing happened with reading the Bible, more often. It was also linked to attitudes towards science.
Wow.
Including believing that there is, that they can be compatible, that religion and science can be compatible.
Fundies, please start reading the Bible.
Read the Bible more.
Read the Bible. It has beneficial effects on your mind.
According to this study, if someone comes to you and says that they don't believe in social justice and that they don't believe in science, it probably means they're just not reading the Bible enough.
I hate this.
Why, Frank?
Because it's just stupid. It's just absolutely absurd.
What?
Oh, I just used the stupid word.
It's science. What are you going to do?
Yeah. All right. That's awesome. Cool.
I'm just saying. Baylor University. What are you going to do?
Thanks, Baylor.
Yeah.
That was well done.
Well, I mean, I don't know. It makes sense to me. If you read the Bible enough, eventually you're going to get the sense that Jesus actually wanted people to take care of each other and wanted to take care of the poor and stuff.
Yeah. No.
And it also means that you're probably considering the world in a more thoughtful way than people who are just sort of out there believing things without actually reading them. And if you're doing that, then you're probably more likely to be
somebody who actually
scientifically minded,
who reads, right? Like if you like, it's not like, I hate to just draw on like stereotypes here, but like, if you just don't read. Right. Like you're not a reader. You're not much of a thinker. You're not much of anything. Right. As far as that's concerned. Right. You don't really ponder your world. You don't do this. You don't do that. Right.
Especially
if you go around reading the Bible all the time. Like that's probably not two things don't link up.
No,
it's an interesting thought.
What ends up happening is that people read a little bit of the Bible. They go to church there and then they decide that it's true, but they don't continue to read it.
Right.
They figure they've got it down. They know that it's already true. Well, and they stop.
These are people who arrive at church with Bible in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And they turn to the page and they read along to the prescribed one or two little verses that are being talked about in that moment.
Right. And whoever their pastor is has told them that these verses are supporting X theory.
Right.
And then they just buy it.
They never read the context. They never go in deeper, whatever. Anyways.
Because you get lost in a bunch of begats and shit.
But I think the most important thing here that we do need to mention is that you're probably still better off just not reading the Bible at all.
Yeah, don't read the Bible.
So.
No, that's not true. Read it. I support people reading the Bible. I just don't support them believing it. It's a bunch of nonsense. But we should know it. It's so funny. Like,
well, that's true. That's,
like, I always, my iPhone, I have the Bible and the Book of Mormon, all of that loaded on there.
Mm-hmm.
So that, like, the other day, someone was wearing a t-shirt that said some biblical reference, mm-hmm. and I was like, I wonder what that is, and I just looked it up.
Right.
But I had a friend call me the most dangerous atheist she knew because when I told her that I always had the scriptures with me. Oh, I was like, no, funny. I always carry those with me.
That's,
I know.
That's funny. Yeah, actually, I was talking to one of my students the other day, and the title of her film that she's working on is called Judas.
Oh.
And it's intentionally a reference to you know, Judas in the Bible, and the betrayal of Jesus and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And
which I think was rude of Judas.
Oh, it was rude. And she's a non-believer. I think she might be atheist. I think she's self identifies as atheist.
Sure.
But nonetheless, she's a total non-believer. She goes to Catholic school, but, you know, that's her parents. But anywho, she, we were talking about the whole, this whole thing, and she was like, you know, like, she's like, I don't want to push this metaphor too far because I don't want people to think that this is like a religious film or anything.
Right.
Well, the film is about like heroin use in Salt Lake City amongst teenagers, right? And how it pushes people. She's kind of creating this metaphor about how it makes you betray your loved ones.
Right.
And, but she's like, she was like, I just feel like I need to open it with a Bible verse. And I'm like, yeah, I think that's cool. I think that's really a smart move.
Especially if you're naming your show.
Exactly.
Your
You've already gone that
Judas,
far.
Yeah.
And she's like, but you don't think that that will make people just think that it has a religious slant or this? And I'm like, nothing else about your film is religious.
Right.
And I'm like, I think that's part of being a cultured, well-read, you know, member of our society is you do have a familiarity with the Bible.
Sure.
You do know these stories, you know, like it's part of it.
I think people should read all the crazy books. Bible and Book of Mormon and the Quran and the...
Sure.
Don't read the Book of Mormon.
Don't.
You know, I take that one back.
Yeah.
It is so boring. Just don't even bother.
Ether in print.
Right? Yeah. Chloroform in print.
Chloroform.
Is
yeah,
what,
that's it.
Is what Twain said.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, I think it's just so, so boring. But read, you know, read the Quran, read the Bhagavad Gita, you know, educate yourself. Figure out what's good in it and what's crap in it.
Sure. Yeah.
Hint, like mass murder and God condoned rape is crap.
Yeah.
That's a hit. Hint.
Sure. Okay.
Right there.
Good. Good.
Just want to point people in the right direction.
Thanks, Dan. All right. Well, I feel like we need to bring up one of the big news stories of the week.
Oh, yeah. There was a couple of those.
And this one is the whole, the film that was at least initially blamed for the riots in Libya and Egypt.
Right.
And the death of some consulate workers. And
the ambassador.
And the ambassador himself, yeah. I don't know. I'm sitting here looking at a page that actually doesn't have... It's on religionnews.com. It's the 12 essential points about the offensive film on the Prophet Muhammad. But anyways, we were having an interesting conversation earlier that I kind of want to just sort of revisit.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I kind of took the position for a minute of, I think that this is a community that needs to be, what's the right word? Desensitized to...
You're saying Muslims.
Muslims.
Especially Middle Eastern.
Middle Eastern Muslims need to be... They need to be desensitized to bad and poor representations of things that they hold sacred.
To speech.
They
need to be desensitized
to free speech.
To free speech.
And I think that it's an interesting conversation... initially I'll just write by itself. We almost need to hold that conversation outside of the facts,
right,
of like what actually went down with this whole thing, because it's like, you know, the because it turns out, right, that it probably was Al-Qaeda and it was a very organized thing, and they were just looking for an excuse or
something to make it look like a mob had formed spontaneously.
Exactly.
But
right.
that's not at all what happened.
But that's not what happened. And then, you know, and
probably.
Then, probably. I mean, who knows at this point? But I mean, what do you think of that? Sort of this balancing of freedom of speech versus religious sensitivity.
I heard some guy on NPR, and I don't remember who. I didn't catch who it was because I just came into it late. But he was talking about how he said, you know, I think he was Middle Eastern in origin, and he said we need to really discuss whether this American thought of free speech being sacred is such a good idea. Because it isn't, because you know, when you offend people this deeply, it causes, you know, it, we can't, they can't be expected to be, I don't know what he was saying, but I just thought to myself, bullshit.
Yeah.
It needs to go the other way.
Yeah.
Where people need to just chill out.
Stop being so ridiculously sensitive.
Right. I need to be able to say, you know, because I'll tell you what, Muslims, I think your shit's ridiculous. I do.
Yeah.
No, I do too. I'm not saying anything that's like that's out there. I'm just being honest.
No, yeah.
And if honesty can't be, I mean, and frankly, people should have the right to be dishonest too. People should have the right to be complete and utter dicks. Meaning, making this film is not the worst thing that anybody's ever done in the world. It was first of all, sympathize.
I have not seen the film.
I watched,
but it's being characterized as basically a hate speech propaganda piece, right, akin to like maybe like Birth of the Nation.
Here's the thing. I saw some of it. I went onto the YouTubes, I found it, I watched some of it. I almost rioted myself. Because it's so fucking stupid. It's so bad. The guy, at one point, the guy had claimed that he had gotten $5 million from Jews to make this film. There's no way he had five. If you, this thing was made for $3,000 and a bunch of hateful people like dressed up in stupid clothes to make it. It is so bad.
Do you buy the claim that the actors didn't know?
Because
I can totally see that. I mean, as a filmmaker, I totally get it. I could dupe some actors into doing something that they wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine that one or two would have to have been complicit,
mm-hmm,
and the rest were just sort of doing like thinking they were getting some great acting break or whatever.
Sure,
but oh my god, it's so bad. None of these actors have ever been in anything else before. These aren't actors. I mean, it was just awful. I wanted to like storm something and burn a flag as well, just because it was so bad. But content-wise, it was clearly ridiculous. And if you're going to take offense at that...
Well, it almost seems to me that, like, I mean, I don't know. Maybe people sat around in the Middle East, you know, watching it. Right, and going, and then forming some sort of outrage. But my guess is it was a lot of hearsay. It was a lot of people saying, oh, there's this video that they made in America, and we need now to go riot.
Right. It was a bunch of organized groups that were already angry.
Yeah, exactly.
And somebody was like, hey, you'll never guess what's going to come out in America. It's a movie, and it's been made just to blah, 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 blah. And, you know, they don't speak English, and I think the thing's all in English, so they don't know how awful it is or whatever. But yeah, I mean, it's if you watch it, clearly there's nothing credible about this film at all.
Right.
The production values are so ridiculous and stuff. Like, nothing about this thing is credible. It looks like what it is, which is that a crackpot made a stupid film. So yeah. But yeah, I mean, if you got a room full of guys who are easily whipped up anyway,
right,
all you need is anything, mm-hmm, to whip them up. Some guy in Florida with a big dumb mustache who says he's going to burn the Quran, and suddenly everybody's all up in arms. But I think your point is right.
Mm-hmm.
Just get the fuck over it.
Yeah.
It makes me
want to like go out and make some mildly offensive shit. You know what I mean? Like, actually dress an actor up and have him play the Prophet Muhammad, you know, and like do the things that push their buttons. But I won't because I don't think that's the right thing to do.
No, but it does bring out the sort of the little shit in you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it makes me want to do that too. Or at least have it be completely non-offensive. Like a fact, just like an informational video, but have it be hosted by the Prophet Muhammad. Just like the content of the video is all very like, very reaching out, very much a bridge piece, building piece. But then it's just hosted. Hi, I'm Muhammad.
And here's my question, founder of Islam. We know it's bad to do the image, to like represent the image, but is it bad to represent the voice of the Prophet Muhammad?
If it is, then I just got in trouble.
Yeah, you just got yourself in trouble.
Well, I already told Muslims I think their shit's ridiculous. What more?
Yeah,
that's different than
like drawing a picture of Muhammad or doing his voice.
Well, I, first of all, he didn't speak English, so it wasn't a very good impression, because I don't speak no Arabic.
No, that's true.
So, yeah, I don't care.
But, anyways.
Fatwa all you want.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously, like I said, it's almost necessary to take certain parts of this and hold the conversation in a vacuum.
Yeah.
Regardless of the facts.
Yeah, that's true.
Because,
there's an ideological point. I know that's
a weird thing, but there's things that really need to be discussed. It's probably a terrible position to kind of say, well, we need it. It's good for us to hold these discussions outside of the, without holding them up to facts. But, it's a really, how do you balance free speech in the 21st century, in such a connected world? Is making a film like that almost the equivalent of shouting fire in a crowded theater?
You know, it may actually be at this point.
Yeah.
Just culturally speaking, it may be that that's the case. Just because things are so ignitable down there right now. But in the end, God damn it, just get over it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I will make this point, though, just to bring it back to some facts. One of the things that has not been covered very well in the American media has been the sort of counter protest and the support that's actually risen up in the streets of Libya. That are condemning the attacks.
Right.
And that's actually been something that the people have been out there. They've been holding up signs written in English.
To say this isn't us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so, I've seen that. I've seen that. That's out there.
It hasn't been widely reported. Well, it's been reported-ish.
I think that
the focus has been on the actual attacks.
Yeah. And I've definitely seen that, and I've seen a few things pop up that say, there was a thing going around on Facebook that said, if you don't want Christianity to be judged by these guys, and it shows a bunch of Christian dipshits that are, that blew people up, then don't judge Islam by these guys, and it shows all, Osama bin Laden and all that sort of
Sure.
thing. I get all that. I think we just need to get rid of the religion altogether, but that's a little ways off. We'll see. Although, there's another way that we could handle all of this.
Oh, what's that, Dan?
Well, we should be subscribing to a new publication that's coming out in Poland.
Oh.
I don't read Polish, but if I did, this would be a strong contender for my subscription dollars.
Okay. Tell me more.
Well, it's a very Catholic country, Poland.
So it is, yeah.
And
they created a pope.
They did. And by the way, when I was there this summer, I don't think anyone has told them that he's gone now.
Really?
There is not a single image of Pope Benedict anywhere around there. Cardinal Ratzinger is nowhere to be found.
Wow.
But John Paul is everywhere.
Yeah. It's like
his image, you can still buy 400,000 things that have his image on it.
It's like Kennedy.
Oh.
President Kennedy, his picture was in the 90s when I was in Italy. It was still everywhere. He was the Catholic president.
Right. Nobody told them that he was gone.
They were like, oh, really? There's no longer a Catholic president of the United States?
Yeah. In Poland, there is now a publication that is, what's it called? Let me find it. It's called, I just can't pronounce that. That's just not a word. That's a Polish word. But it's about exorcism. It's the Exorcist magazine.
What?
Yeah. It's called Exorcista. The new magazine, it'll have an initial print run of 15,000 copies.
Oh my.
And it's all about exorcism. Apparently exorcism's been flourishing in the post-communist Eastern Europe bloc.
Exorcism blows my mind.
I know.
Like, we have talked about exorcism before, and I think I've made the same point before, which is, I just can't believe I can't believe shit's for real.
Right?
People actually, like, modern day, for real, not in some movie, are doing exorcisms.
Yeah.
Like, it just blows my mind.
Yeah.
And I know that's the Mormon upbringing where there's nothing like that, really.
Right.
And so, like, my exposure to it growing up was just, it was only in movies. And then to, like, as an adult, realize...
People think that someone's being possessed by a demon.
That blows my mind.
Yeah. So apparently the number of exorcists in Poland has risen from 4 to more than 120 in the last 15 years.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, they're doing a...
And that warrants a magazine?
Well, you know, it wouldn't just be for the exorcists. It would be for those interested in exorcism.
Oh,
and maybe priests interested in becoming exorcists? I don't know.
Or just a curious public?
There's an interesting quote here that I think is just fascinating. It's from Father Alexander Posaki.
Sure.
I don't know how to pronounce it. And he says, capitalism creates more opportunities to do business in the area of occultism. Fortune telling has even been categorized as employment for taxation.
What?
Yeah. It's find the money.
Oh,
there's
my
money
God.
In this shit.
No.
Your daughter doesn't need a therapist. She needs an exorcist.
Oh my God.
Let's get the demon out of her.
Oh, poor dear.
Oh, it's all just sad. But, you know.
I love the idea of a magazine, though. Like, how do we get a copy of it, and how do we get it translated into English?
I know. I don't know. For 10 zloty, zlotya is how they would...
Zlotya?
Yeah, it's spelled Z-L-O-T-Y, but I think they would say zlotya.
Zlotya.
The L should be crossed, even though it's not in this article.
God damn it.
They don't know anything. I've got a bunch of Polish zlotya. I've got, like 200 Polish zloty in my wallet right now.
You could get like a gumball.
I could get.
Wait, how much was the magazine?
10 zloty. I could get a whole bunch of magazines.
There you could. Yeah. Why do you have so much Polish money?
Because I didn't change it back before I got out of the country.
Like 200 would be a sum. If you can buy a whole magazine for 10.
10 is about a little over $3. So yeah, I've got a bunch.
You got some. You're like a Polish millionaire.
I am. I am a Polish millionaire. I just need to go and find an exchange place for it.
Yeah.
Here in the States. Anyway.
You should go do that, Dan.
So maybe, I don't know, maybe they have pictures of people floating and heads turning around backwards and all of the things that...
Oh, my God.
Theoretically, that never happen. Anyway.
Okay.
There you go.
I've got a message for you, Dan.
Ooh, I like messages.
From Jacques Berliner Blau.
Which means blue person from Berlin.
Weird.
I guess. I don't know. Roughly.
Jacques the Blue Berliner.
Right.
Well, his message to you, Dan,
ooh,
is
me.
Stop whining.
Have I been whining?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, you really haven't been. I'm assuming it's probably just Jack or Jacques Berliner Blau.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of thinks a little bit like you and I do.
Oh, yeah?
A little, yeah, yeah. There's definitely some... The Venn diagram has a lot of overlap between him and us. And so anyways, he just wrote a book called How to Be Secular, A Call to Arms for Religious Freedom.
Oh,
His message is one of kind of calling the American atheists out being a little over the top.
Now, are you saying American atheists as in the people
atheists.
The people in America who are atheists or
no,
or
the organization American Atheists.
Oh, okay.
Basically, he says American atheist movements, and this is not the fully capitalized one, just American atheist movements, though fancying themselves a lion, are more like the gimpy little zebra crossing over the river full of crocs.
Although fancying themselves a lion. Okay, sorry, I didn't understand what you said.
Oh, what did I say?
Oh, just lion.
Oh, okay.
I'm like,
fancying themselves a lion, the animal, right?
Yeah.
And he calls out most American atheists. As we're talking, not the official American atheists.
You place. Gimpy zebras.
But he does mention, he does call them out quite a bit in the book, apparently.
Oh.
And so, yeah.
So he's just saying, he's saying that these guys think that they're big, a big deal, and they think that they're having some major effect, and they're
right.
not.
Well, what he's promoting is secularism.
Okay.
And I actually, I really want to get this book and read it so we can actually talk about it a little bit more in depth. I just kind of wanted to put it out there that, yet here's another person who is calling for very similar things. Don't be so angry. Don't mock religious people. It's completely opposite, you know, to, you know, it's going to be completely ineffective in achieving the larger goal, which is acceptance of atheists in America.
Right. And it's not, and it's not just acceptance of atheists. Like, that is one of the major goals that we need to be working toward. But there are other major goals, including finding a way to say, let's not bring religion into our public, into our public sphere.
Yeah.
Without everybody saying, being able to say, well, they're just attacking religion.
Right, exactly.
And the problem is that every time a billboard goes up that says, you know, that says something like, Christians are stupid, join angry atheists and be fun, and, well, you know, we're better.
Right.
It just, it basically negates our message rather than, I mean, it does... As was pointed out to me, those billboards do increase membership in that organization.
Sure, they probably help from with fundraising.
From people who already are atheists.
Exactly.
It does not help our place in society. It does not help our message in the world. And it sounds like this Berliner Blau guy is with us on that.
Yeah. And he actually, I watched one of his videos that he puts that he put up on YouTube. And it was his take on the whole Chick-fil-A thing.
Mm.
It was the one that I watched. And I kind of liked his approach. I liked his angle. I liked how he it seemed extremely rational.
Huh.
And that's the thing. Like that's one of the things that you preach a lot is just sort of the need for a rational approach to everything. And that's the problem that I have with the posting of these really angry billboards and these alienating billboards, right? They don't seem to have been fully thought out.
Right.
They don't seem to actually be like looking at the big picture.
It's affirming their own self.
Mm-hmm.
It's this thing of like, you see, I'm right. Ha ha.
Which only affirms all the religious people's preconceived ideas about what atheists are,
which is a bunch of dicks.
That approach is only feeding into their narrative about atheism.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the problem.
And it's not like everything we need to do it's not like everything we do as atheists needs to be about engineering other people's views of us.
Sure, no.
I don't think that's...
You can't live your life that way.
No, absolutely not. But when you're crafting a message that you're trying to put out into society at large, when that is the whole point of... I mean, and that's what a billboard is. That's what going on a show is.
Exactly.
Like, that's crafting a message. That message needs to be thought out a little bit more than just like, haha, we know how stupid your religion is.
Right.
Well, great. You know, go ahead and believe that. I believe that, too. I believe that religion is pretty stupid.
It's just a lot of preaching to the choir.
Right. And only preaching to the choir.
Only the choir is going to hear you.
To use a religious metaphor.
Yeah. Well, it's hard not to.
Right. Yeah.
Brent's been making fun of me because I keep talking about, well, this atheist preaches this and this atheist preaches that. And he's like, why are you using the word preaches?
Right. Well, because...
But that's what it is.
Well, and it doesn't, you know, and what I've finally come to is that these phrases, these words don't just belong to religion anymore. They belong to the society. They are
exactly.
They are now cultural words, not religious words.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. I mean, honestly, yeah. When your message is only going to be well received or only going to be received as intended by people who already agree with you.
Right.
What have you accomplished?
Well, and this is another quote from the book. If atheists want to live in a secular country, they will need allies. Those allies are called religious moderates.
Right.
And those people, moderates are going to swing with you know, like if they see you as a bunch of jerks, they're not going to come over and side with you.
Right.
Well, and they're not going to defend you. And they're not like the religious moderates are people who can totally understand the benefits of living in a secular society.
Right.
Because they don't have an
agenda. It benefits them too.
To go out and try to get everybody to be their color of religious.
Right.
That's not typically moderate approach.
Well, I think one of the interesting points is that this, you know, these billboards that are so volatile, these, you know, when people go on Bill O'Reilly and just yell back and forth with him, what they're doing is taking those potential allies and pushing them away.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're actually having the opposite effect that they need to be having.
Right.
They're pushing instead of drawing.
Right.
Great. Thanks a lot, guys. Well done. I hope we're all proud of ourselves. So, yeah, there you go.
Anyways, I want to get a copy of that book.
That sounds really interesting.
And then I'm going to read it, and then I'm going to not stop talking about it for a while.
I think that's probably true. You're going to get intolerable for a minute.
Oh, shut up. Anytime I read a book. Oh, Frank read a book.
This is why I don't read. Tell. This is why I don't read.
Look at him. I want to going around talking about his book.
God damn it. Did he mention the book again?
Anytime he reads a book, you have to just give him like 3 weeks. Don't go around him because he's insufferable.
No, we need to send one person into him to get it all out.
Who's it going to be this time?
Who's the sacrificial lamb that gets to talk to him about the book? Gets to hear all the ranting about the book.
So stupid.
Anyway.
I don't do this.
No, you're fine.
No.
You're fine.
I do go on and on.
Well, it's kind of our job right now. We are podcasters, and all we do is talk into microphones the entire time. So really, we kind of have to have things to blather on about.
That's true. All right, cool.
Anyway, if you want to blather on to us, there are ways to do that.
Yeah, you can get on our Facebook page at facebook.com/TGIAtheist.
Yeah, that's a good one. Or you can go to thankgodimatheist.com. And read our blog and you know, check all that stuff out.
Ooh, yeah.
Or
you can email us,
which is podcast@thankgodimatheist.com.
And we also have a voicemail, which is a great place to give us some feedback. Tell us what you think of the show.
Get your voice on the show.
Get your voice on the show. That's 424-666-8442.
Yeah. Or just yell at the wind and hope that it gets to us.
That works too. We have a little bit of audio to play for you today,
as we like to do.
As we like to do, and you know, like everybody out there might be getting tired, a little bit tired of Pat Robertson.
I don't know how,
but
how do you get tired of that guy?
Here's the deal: we're going to keep playing as long as he keeps saying stuff like we're about to play. We're going to keep playing him.
And this was, by the way, I should say that this was. We were pointed in the direction of this particular video by one of our listeners, a Facebook friend, and I'm trying to pull it up right now. Who was it? It was Anitra.
Oh, cool.
Facebook friend Anitra said all y'all might like this.
All right. Well, here it is.
First one comes from Michael, who says, my wife has become a real problem. She has no respect for me as the head of the house. She insults me. She even went as far as stretching her hand to beat me. I've lost my self-confidence. Her words hurt so much, and she refuses to talk through our problems. Please tell me what I can do.
Well, you could become a Muslim, then you could beat her.
But in lieu of that...
You don't want to go to Saudi Arabia?
No.
You know, I think this man's got to stand up to her, and he can't let her get away with this stuff. And, you know, I don't know. I don't think we condone wife beating these days, but something's got to be done to make
not
her.
Physically, but I mean, why would she not want to talk through their problems? That's
well,
so unlike.
She is just totally. Well, she's rebellious. The chances are she was rebellious with her father and mother. She's a rebellious child, and she doesn't want to submit to any authority. And she probably had temper tantrums when she was a kid. And, you know, the little girl, I hate you, and she wants to slap her father. Well, that's the same kind of thing. She's transferred the father now. She might... Oh, I hate to say everything's got to be some psychological counseling, but... You know.
Well, no, but I think you need a third party here.
Yeah, definitely. But that's the problem. She does not understand authority. When she was growing up, nobody made her behave. And now you've got a 13-year-old in a 30-year-old woman's body, and she is acting like a child.
Yeah.
Now, what do you do with that? You can't divorce her according to the scripture. And so I say, move to Saudi Arabia.
Jesus Christ. Oh,
Patty. I think he just gave that man permission.
I think he really, really, really wanted to say, beat the shit out of her.
Yeah, it's pretty...
It's so clear. He's like, well, we
can't really say that anymore.
I guess we don't do wife beating anymore, I guess.
But it is what the Bible would have you do.
How do you do this?
So what do we do?
What do we do? There's got to be a thing. It's beating. It's got to be a beating.
The best thing for you would be to deny the Christ, become Muslim, and move to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah,
just so you can beat her.
Just so you can beat her. And then reaccept Jesus as your Lord.
Yeah, later on, once she's back in line.
Once she's in line. Because it's her problem.
Oh, absolutely.
Poor guy. Doesn't have an obedient wife.
Mm.
That's just hard.
We are making an assumption here.
What?
It could have been a woman writing in. It could be her abusive lesbian.
I think it was Michael.
It was Michael.
Although I knew a girl named Michael.
Yeah, I did too.
We'll
not
see
spelled
no.
the traditional way.
No.
Though.
I just, you know, it's one of those things where it's just like, you get hung up on the wife beating thing because that's clearly like outrageous.
Oh yeah, it's fun.
But
well,
I,
not the,
no, you're
the,
right.
The,
yeah.
With the audio, it's
that's
fun.
That's the juicy part. But yeah. We're still doing the whole "my wife has to be obedient" thing. We're really still doing that.
Well, like, to be fair,
Pat Robertson,
I'm gonna pull up that letter again. My wife has become a real problem. She has no respect for me as the head of the house. Okay, that's a problem right there.
Yeah,
she insults me. That's not nice.
No,
and she even went as far as stretching her hand to beat me. I don't know.
First of all, I love the line where he says, well, you can't divorce her according to scripture, which is just like, well, that's a good enough reason right there to divorce the scripture. Like, believe me, divorce is great. Most people, you need to have that option in your back pocket.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially if apparently this wife might start beating him.
Yeah.
If she, maybe
Boy,
she's
Pat
moving
Robertson
to...
better look out.
I know.
She's going to come get him.
She is. She's going to beat the... He's an old man.
Oh, I'd beat Pat Robertson.
Oh, yeah. Well, that guy can't even defend himself at this point. I just push him and watch his hip break.
Oh, just push him in the hip and it'd break. He doesn't even have to fall over.
Or just sneak up behind him and say, boo, and hope that that does some.
Yeah. I love the woman who, like, reads the letters. Like, first of all, I love the format because there's always like a woman there reading.
I think it's the same woman, right?
There's sometimes this was a white woman. There's sometimes a black woman.
Really?
Isn't there a black woman sometimes?
I don't think I've ever seen that, but possible.
I think so.
I thought she was just the co-host. She's the Kathy Lee, or the
no. I think it's like the Pat Robertson show, and he has various different women who help him out.
It's more like a Wheel of Fortune then, or Price is Right, where you just have one or two women.
Yeah. It may not be a black woman. It might just be.
Anyway, it's not like
know.
We watch the show.
Obviously, yeah. All I ever get are the clips that
we end up
talking about.
Which means that we're not being fair.
But I love her little, like, like.
He's like, well, you can't beat her. And she's like, well, no, you can't. So
let's move on.
Well, you get the sense that her job isn't just to read the questions and interact. Her job is to, like, know when he's going so far afield and try and pull him back. Subtly try to like, oh shit, he's doing it again.
Pat.
Well, no, you can't beat her, Pat. And he's like, well, I hate to say anything about counseling and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, no, you should.
Yeah.
Counseling sounds about right now.
Like, Pat Robertson is like the worst kind of example of the generation he grew up in.
Right, exactly.
Men who just totally diss on counseling, totally discredit it
yeah.
as like this sign of weakness, or
right.
it's far, I mean, for the religious side, that it's like this, you know, like, why do you need a counselor? You just need a good minister, you
yeah.
know?
And a beating.
And a beating. That's what
that's you all need. You need.
Because, boy, God. Those were well-run homes with lots of happy children.
Yeah. Only good came out of those homes.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Spare the rod and spoil the wife. That's what I say.
Oh, that's nice.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I came up with that.
Yeah.
Anyway, hey, should we talk about our little field trip?
Yeah.
We went to the temple.
We did go to the temple.
We even sang temple hymns on our way up there.
We did. Yeah.
Or children's songs. It was like a primary song.
It was a primary song. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So for those of you who are not too familiar with Mormons.
The Mormons.
When they build a new temple, and let's actually explain kind of what a temple is.
Yeah.
So in the Mormon faith, temples are this thing that you, as a child, you strive for, you work for. Like you go to church normally at your little local meeting house, right? That's what every once a week, and you do all the normal boring Mormon stuff,
right?
Right. And then you reach adulthood, and when you are about, if you're a young man, it's when you're about to go on a mission, and you go to the temple in order to receive your endowment.
Mm.
And so you go in, and this is the first moment that you'll actually, from this point on, you'll wear garments.
Right.
Garments are
linked.
Get the
underwear.
The magic underwear is linked to the temple ceremony.
Right.
And to being like a faithful and good Mormon, you wear your garments.
Mm-hmm.
And the temple is also where you receive your new name.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the name, if you're a man, this is the name that the Lord will use on the morning of the first resurrection to call you forth from the grave.
Oh, yeah.
And if you are a woman, it is the name that your husband will use to call you forth from the grave on the morning of the first resurrection. And
that's true.
That's true, everybody. So, fun fact, men know their wives' temple name.
Right.
Women do not know their husband's.
Right.
Temple name. Why would they need to?
Well, they wouldn't need to.
They're not the Lord.
Here's another fun fact.
Yes.
Everybody that gets their endowment out on that same day has the same temple name.
That's true.
Most Mormons don't think that. Most of them go through and they're like, oh, I got a very unique and special name to me.
Yeah.
Except that.
No.
No. Which means, as a Mormon man, mm-hmm. in the millennium when men are calling forth their wives.
Mm-hmm.
You could call forth a whole shit ton of people.
You probably will be.
Yeah. You're like, yeah. Hey, Ruth, yeah. Come forth. And out
comes. Arise, Ruth,
and
from
then
the grave.
Out comes like 20, 40, 50 Ruths. You don't know how many Ruths there are in your little vicinity. You hope you get the right one.
And you're like, you're, oh, God.
You're like, oh, not you. Sorry, go back. Yeah. No, not you. You, there you are.
But of course, they all just look like the
crypt keeper
at this point.
This is the Mormon version of the zombie apocalypse, in which you call forth zombies from the grave.
And so anyways, the temple is this lovely, special place. What were some of the words that were used in the video that described?
Well, I happen to have in front of me the brochure that was handed to us.
Oh, yes,
and it says, Brigham City, Utah Temple, welcome. We hope you find peace and inspiration during your visit here.
Yes, indeed. And also what's important to know about temples is that the public is not allowed into temples.
Right.
Once they are dedicated.
Once they are dedicated to the Lord.
Yes.
You can't go
it's
in
a special
unless you...
ceremony. One of the top officials of the church comes out and he waves his hands about. And the crowd actually does the Hosanna shout
with their handkerchiefs in hand. They raise their hand.
They go, Hosanna!
They throw their hands in the air with their handkerchiefs and they say Hosanna three times.
Yeah.
And then they break a bottle of champagne across the bow.
No, that's where he lies.
Oh, yeah. Dang it.
First part's true. It's Martinelli's.
That's right.
They just use some sparkling apple cider.
Grab us some. Yeah, exactly.
And they christen the temple.
Yeah.
No, none of that. That second part about the christening's not true.
But they do dedicate it. And then once they do that, you have to have a Mormon temple recommend
right,
to go
which
in.
Is a bit of an ordeal to get. So
yeah.
But anyways, so I don't recommend.
Well, yeah. Doing yeah. That. If you want to go into a dedicated temple, you're going to have to be a Mormon for probably many years.
A year.
Is it a year?
It's the standard minimum waiting time recommended is a year.
Yeah.
I seem to recall that it's a year.
So you're going to have to put on a good show because you're going to have to
give up 10% of your gross income.
You're going to have to have paid a solid tithe. They have to believe that you fully buy into this shit.
Yeah.
To get there.
So you've gotten yourself there.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no. Let's back up. This is all pre dedication.
Right? Mm, yeah.
It's a special place where lots of good things happen. It's where Mormon weddings, sealings yeah. happen.
All Mormon weddings of Mormons in good standing
right.
take place in the temple.
In the temple. If you have your temple recommend, then you can go to the wedding.
And when you say sealings, this is a thing that they do where, like, if a family is blended, you know, you got a father and a mother that are not marry, you know, let's say the Brady Bunch. You got a Brady Bunch situation,
mm-hmm.
except that what was the Brady Bunch dad's name?
Bob.
No.
Dick.
That's not it at all. I don't remember.
Dale.
Now you're just listing names.
Tim.
Stop listing names. It was. It wasn't Greg though. Greg was the older brother. I don't remember. Anyway, Mike.
Mike.
It was Mike Brady.
Oh, there you go.
And what was the mom's name?
Carol.
Mike and Carol.
Yeah.
All right. So Mike and Carol are going to get married. They, you know, after both having lost a spouse and both of them having three mm-hmm. children apiece, and they want their children to all be part of the same family, eternal family.
Yes.
That's important.
It's important. It's very important.
So,
well, here's the deal.
Yeah.
Let's say on episode 2 of the Brady Bunch, the Mormon missionaries had shown up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they go through the whole thing. They do everything that we just said. They stick around for a year. They would then go to the temple.
Mm-hmm.
So they're already married, right?
Right.
So Mike and Carol go to the temple to have their marriage sealed.
For
time and all eternity.
Because they already got the time thing
they
covered.
They already have, yes.
Time, in this case, just means until you die.
Right.
And then
eternity.
Means eternity.
Is eternity. So in the celestial kingdom. And so their kids would actually all have to be present, even though they're not recommend holders.
Right, because
they would have to be brought in.
They have to be part of this eternal union now.
Exactly.
So they all have to be sealed to the parents.
Right. But if your parents were good little Mormon kids and got married in the temple, and then they have you, you're what's called being born into the covenant.
Right.
And so you do not have to go in and then be sealed later.
Right.
Because it's just understood. Your parents are sealed. You get born into that sealing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a handy dandy little trick they came up with.
Yeah.
So anyways, we're kind of meandering here.
Yeah, we are.
But anyway, so we decided, hey, why don't we go up and we do church reviews. We need to get back to that.
Yeah.
But why don't we do a temple review?
A temple review. Well, so here's the thing. It's quite a production, mm-hmm. especially in Utah. When they do an open house for a temple in Utah, all the members of the church who have already been through dozens of temples
don't understand this.
Show up for this shit.
And all people who could show up afterward with their recommend
and just go
and just check it out.
Yeah. Oh, well, except that then they would have to actually do temple work, which
but
would
they
be,
love it.
Well,
they love it.
Anyway, so we show up and, you know, we had to get the tickets. We had to sign up for tickets online.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have to, but we did.
No, apparently they'll let any Tom, Dick, or Harry who gets in line in.
But we wanted to be good, so we got our tickets.
Well, I figured, you know, the Mormon church, they're like super orderly.
Right.
And they've got a way of doing it. And if they ask you to do, if they ask the members to do something, they typically just fall in line and do it the way.
Yeah.
That right way. Yeah. No, there was none of that here.
Well, there was. I mean, people were, okay, so what we did was we showed up at the parking lot that they wanted us to show up to, because there's not enough right. parking around the temple for this.
Right.
And so this is an off-site parking lot where they're busing people in.
Right.
So we show up at this parking lot. We get on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
We show up at 8 o'clock.
Right. Our tour was for 8 o'clock.
So we're there a little, just a little before 8 in the evening time.
Mm-hmm.
And away we go. We get on the bus. Finally, it goes. We show up at the temple, and there's a bit of a line.
Yeah.
We can see a bit of a line.
Well, we can kind of see down into the parking garage, which is sort of subterranean and right. adjacent to the building.
And it looks like there's
like, wow, that's quite the line.
There's a bunch of people, and then we see the rest of the line.
Yeah.
It went outside out of the parking garage, down the street to the corner, left
up the whole length of the next street.
The entire block, and then half a block, and then it turns again and goes half a block.
Yeah.
We have curved around an entire half of the temple. The temple yeah. takes up an entire city block. We've gone all the way around that block.
Yeah. And it's a big city block. It's not like it's some little dinky thing.
No.
The thing is huge.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So, yeah, there we were. So we waited in line for a million years. Yeah. And then you get into the parking garage, and it's like Disneyland, where you think because you've entered the building, you're done going through the lines. But no, right. there's more line.
Now it's serpentines mm-hmm. back and forth.
Yeah.
And then once you get to the end of that, they're like, oh, hey, there's a video we want you to watch.
Yeah.
Oh, like God. A 10, 15 minute long video.
Really? It wasn't more than an hour? Because it felt like it was hours and hours and hours long. It was so boring and stupid. And it's all about like, we want you to understand what the temple means to us. And we believe yeah. that the temple is a holy place.
And it's
place
all and designed for non-members. But the only people there are members
right.
besides us.
Right. But they're feeling the spirit, so they're fine.
Yeah.
Because, frankly, the entire time I'm in line there, like, the shit in me is just in full effect. I just wanted to ruin everybody's time the entire time. I was good.
Yeah. Well, I was actually Rachel, who has hosted... she guest hosted once here.
Right.
So you guys have some of our regular listeners have a frame of reference as to who I was hanging out with last night.
Yeah.
So I was chatting with Rachel and talking about going to the temple with you. And I was like, yeah, it actually makes it really exciting because you never know if he is really going to. and even if he doesn't really do something completely inappropriate, he's still saying things. He's still whispering things to you that you're just like, please don't say that any louder than you're currently saying it.
Yeah.
She thought that was kind of funny.
I'm telling you, so. Man. I'm literally, like, while we're serpentining through the line, I'm trying to make eye contact with women so that I can wink at them.
Oh, shut up. No, you weren't.
I totally was.
You were winking at the women?
No, none. They're Mormons. They won't make eye contact with you for more than 13, like, nanoseconds. It's literally, like, if they catch your eye, they, like, look away.
Yeah, that's true.
I was trying. I have yeah. to admit. And then I say this to Brent, your boyfriend, who's
yeah.
there with us. I say, mm-hmm. you know, that I'm trying to catch these young girls' eyes to give them a wink just to make them uncomfortable. And he goes, well, why aren't you trying to do that to the boys? And I was like, well, that's an interesting point. So then we're walking, and I'm going to give some old, like, usher guy a wink.
He beat you to it, didn't he?
He winked at me! And then I was all freaked out. Like, what the hell?
Because I think the same guy winked at me.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. And I was going to give that guy a little wink. And then he's like, hey. And I'm like, what the fuck? Just happened. Yeah. Yeah, okay. 1 point for you, Mormon usher man. You got me on that one. You beat me to it.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So
we waited. We watched a stupid goddamn video. Then we get back in line.
Yeah.
It's not like the video. Then you get to go into
no.
the temple. No.
Now we get to suit up.
Oh, yeah.
Which means we have to put booties on.
Yeah.
But actually, there were volunteers there putting them on our feet for us.
Yeah.
We weren't even like they weren't even handing them to us and saying, "Hey, put these over to your
right.
shoes." It's like raise your foot.
Right.
And we'll put it. So that was weird.
Yeah.
And then finally we get to terrible. Go into this goddamn temple.
Which, first of all, talk about anticlimactic.
It is. It's like, I would say a 3.5 to. No, it's a solid 4-star hotel style decor. So it feels. They've done nice finishes, but it's all. But it also feels very corporate.
Oh, yeah.
It feels very, very corporate.
Yeah.
So you go in and it's like, oh. That's nice.
Yeah.
You know, there's some furniture in the waiting room that's, like, nice.
Yeah.
And, you know, marble tile, as I say. And, you know, they've really tried to make it, like, Mormons who refuse to actually acknowledge reality when it comes to things that their church has done would all look at it and go, oh, it's so beautiful.
Right.
It's just so beautiful.
They do such a nice job.
They just really do a great job with everything that they do.
Boy, they really spare no expense.
They spare no expense. It's so beautiful. And it's just so beautiful. It's not. It's so... I think Brent had the best line of the evening, we've been to a few of these things. He really right. hasn't.
And we should point out that obviously I've been through the temple right. as a temple recommend holder. Right. And so has your wife.
Yeah. Yeah. So me and Brent had never been through the temple in that context, but mm-hmm. I've been through a couple,
right.
dedication. And so mm-hmm. Brent, like, he was looking around, and his comment was, it looks like a semi-okay hotel with a strangely small pool. Anyway, let's get on with what the temple has. The temple has three rooms called that each correspond to the three degrees of heaven that we've talked about in the Mormon church.
Not entirely true.
No?
I don't think so.
Don't they have a terrestrial room and a telestial room and a celestial room, traditionally?
Well, if you go to the Salt Lake Temple,
yeah,
which is one of the few that actually has all of the rooms,
right,
because it's a film presentation now, right. And so a lot of the really dinky small
temples.
And by
it, you mean the temple ceremony?
The temple ceremony, yeah. That you start off in like the creation room,
yeah,
right, and then you move on to the garden room, and then you move
meaning
on
the Garden of Eden,
and then after the garden. Is
there a garden in the garden room?
Well, the walls are all painted.
Right.
Yeah. So in the creation room, it's all sort of spacey, right? And then you move on to the garden room, and it's yeah. all sort of gardeny. Imagine the Garden of Eden.
Sure.
It's picture perfect. I mean, that's
lovely flowers.
And there's little animals that don't normally like each other, or that eat each, like one that eats the other. They'll right. be like all snuggled up.
Sure. Right? Sure. And a little babbling brook.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Whatever.
And then, to be honest, I think from the garden room, you get up, and I don't remember what they call the next room, but it's like the, what is it, like the dark and spacious world, or the
dark and stormy
the
night,
dark and something. I can't remember what the next part of it's called, as when they're cast out into the dark and something world. And then from there you have the terrestrial room.
The telestial.
No.
There is no telestial.
I don't think they bother with the telestial because that's hell. Earth.
No, that's terrestrial.
No, in their representation of everything, telestial is the earth.
Is the earth right?
Terrestrial is the moon.
Is the moon?
Or the stars?
I think it's its own thing. It's just a kingdom.
It's a kingdom, but I think it's represented by the moon.
I never heard that. Okay.
And then the sun represents the celestial kingdom.
Right. Okay, that makes sense.
So if you go and you look at like the Salt Lake Temple,
there's sun, moon, and stars.
There's sun, moon, and stars.
Okay.
So the stars might be actually the telestial representation.
Maybe.
Maybe some Mormon experts who...
Let's jump back into our temple now.
Oh, okay, sure.
They've
totally abbreviated the whole thing.
Right.
So now all these rooms, and that's why I was sort of describing what they traditionally always did,
right,
have now been abbreviated into just two rooms and then the celestial room.
Right. So there's...
And nothing happens in the celestial room. That's why I'm...
Right, yeah, yeah.
The
yeah.
two important rooms here... Are the instruction room
and the ceiling room?
Well, no, the ceiling room is not part of the sequence of rooms. You have the instruction room and like a terrestrial. You have like a garden room.
Well,
right?
The instruction room has all the animals, the critters, and everything on it.
Yeah, but then there was one right after it that has the veil. Which one was that? What do they call that one? Oh, that they also list that as an instruction room.
Okay, so two
in that room right there is different from that room.
I'm going to call them the animal mural room, the nature room,
which is probably the garden.
Sure.
Yes.
And then the next one is called the movie theater room.
No, because what you see right there, that doesn't lift up and reveal a screen.
I'm just saying what it looks like.
No, I know. That curtain that looks like it should be revealing a movie screen.
Yeah.
That reveals the veil.
Yeah. Ooh. So behind that is where
you pass through the veil.
You have to
creepy stuff we've talked about before.
Right.
We don't need to get into it. You pass through the veil.
You got to do your secret handshakes.
Walk down a little hallway, and then you walk into the celestial room.
You got to do all the secret handshakes there at the veil,
right? That's true, yeah.
All that stuff. That's fun. And then you go to the celestial room, and it's meant to be the most beautiful room in the world. Like it's supposed to signify heaven to you and the peace and love that is promised unto you and blah blah blah. And it's boring.
Yeah, it is.
It's like your grandmother's, like your most boring old relative's version of heaven. Like,
yeah.
Like it's all white and there's crystal chandeliers and
really sparkly crystal chandeliers.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
did you look up at those?
Yeah.
They were blinding.
They were really, really sparkly crystal chandeliers.
And they had like all the colors of the rainbow.
And then,
they did.
And then fake flowers.
Oh, God. Oh, I don't know what they're thinking.
Fake plants. Why? Yeah. Why? Why fake plants?
Because that's what you do. That's beautiful.
You can't. Nobody can say they spared no expense if you've got plastic plants hanging out.
Yeah.
And the other thing is we're walking up and down stairs this whole time. We're walking through all of these boring, stupid rooms.
It took, what, maybe 15 minutes? 20 max that we were in there?
Oh, it was 20.
20 minutes.
I'd say it was probably 20 minutes of just walking in a line.
So, how long were we there total, though? We arrived at 8 and we left at...
Oh, like 10:30 or something like that.
This thing was absurd.
It was so long.
It was awful. It was like, but Mormons are fine with that because they sit through boring shit all the time.
Yeah, Mormons have, I mean, if there's one thing we can say about Mormonism, growing up Mormon, it trained us for patience. Because my God, just everything about it's just so boring.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was, it was, okay, so it, on the whole, I'm going to give it a B minus.
I don't even think I'd give it that much.
Really?
Yeah, it's somewhere in the C's.
Walking up and down the stairs, we saw a lot of chipped tile already.
Yeah.
Our theory is that they hired some guy's nephew, one of the general authority's nephews, like construction company. They just didn't know what they were doing because there's a bunch of chipped tile and stuff. Yeah. That's sad.
I will
That's
say
just
this
poorly constructed
for the, not for the first time, but for one of the most, this was one of the most palpable times for me though, of really feeling
the spirit,
how weird Mormonism is.
Yeah.
Like how truly, truly bizarre and weird it is.
Yeah.
Because like the temple is just weird. It's inexplicably weird.
Yes. I will go with you on that. However, for me, that's not what shone through on this trip.
What did?
What really came out in this trip for me was how insanely bland these people are.
Yeah.
How when they put their best effort into something, when they do their best thing, it is so lackluster.
But see, that's the thing. I don't think that for some of these smaller temples that they're really putting their best effort in.
That's true.
Because you go to the general conference building, just the conference center, right? Mm-hmm. Their indoor theater that seats 20,000 people with not a pillar in the entire thing to support the the upper balcony area.
Right.
And you're just like, holy crap, this is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
I mean, but then I think what they are getting you on isn't so much the what they've chosen to adorn it with, but rather just the sheer scale.
Right.
It's like going to St. Peter's or something in Rome.
Yeah.
Where you walk in and, well, I mean, St. Peter's is pretty amazing on a lot of fronts, but it's the scale of it that blows your mind.
Yeah.
And that's what they got there so well. And Brigham City Temple, meh. Not so much.
No.
And Mormons, all the awkward conversation that people tried to like start up with us.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. There were the one thing about Mormons is that, first of all, we were clearly not Mormons because we were there in t-shirt and jeans.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife was there in her stylish clothes, which stylish really tends to stand out when you're in a Mormon crowd.
Right.
And they're all in their Sunday best. They're in their, you know, shirt and tie and flower dresses and stuff. So yeah, it's clear that we don't belong there. So the impulse that every Mormon feels is the same impulse that a lot of evangelicals feel, which is to witness to us.
Yeah.
Or actually what the Mormons do is different. They don't witness.
They ask you where you're from.
They fellowship you.
Did you notice that?
They friend at you.
We obviously weren't Mormon.
Right.
And so they go, where are you guys from? Uh-huh. And when we would say Salt Lake, they were like, how's that possible? Well, all right. Boy. We've yammered on for way too long.
Way too long. Sorry. Hope you weren't bored. We were.
Shit. Well, all right. If you would like to at all ever join the conversation, please do so at facebook.com/TGIAtheist or follow our Twitter feed at TGIAtheist.
Yeah. Or you can email us at thankgodimatheist@thankgodimatheist.com.
Or you can leave us a voicemail, 424-666-TGIA. That's 424-666-8442. We would love to hear from you.
Yeah, we sure would. So, join us again next week. We'll have some, maybe one of those interviews we teased you about.
Yeah.
And we'll have some just fun stuff.
Woohoo! All right, guys, have a good one.
Thanks for listening.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.